Real quick, we have to take a break to acknowledge the sponsor of today's episode, which is Secret Nature. Secret Nature's ultra premium CBD gummies are crafted with real botanicals, nothing extra, and designed to fit right into your day with clean, purposeful functionality. So for me personally, I like to take one of their snoozer gummies in the evening to unwind and ensure that I get a good night's sleep. After a long day, especially when my brain is just still running a mile a minute and I can't seem to settle down, I'll take one to help me slow down, unplug, and actually get a good night's sleep. I personally don't drink alcohol because I just don't like the way it makes me feel the next day, but these gummies feel very clean, intentional, and it never leaves me groggy the next morning, just feeling balanced and rested. Secret Nature's gummies are organic and farm grown. They're never lab made. They're ultra premium CBD gummies made with real botanicals and nothing extra. You've got two purpose built options. There's Bliss for clear focus and productive flow if you want to take one during the day, and then you get Snoozers to help you relax and rest at the end of the day. Each gummy has consistent, measured CBD, so there's never any guessing, just clean, reliable functionality that fits naturally into your schedule. Get 30% off your first order at secretnature.com with the code MAMA. That's M-A-M-A. And just a heads up, their Black Friday sale is coming up, and they are going to be offering 25% off on orders of $75 or more, 35% off on orders of $125 or more, and then 40% off on orders of $150 or more between November 26th and the 30th. So don't forget to use my code MAMA when you check out. That's M-A-M-A at secretnature.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Do you ever think about switching insurance companies to see if you could save some cash? Progressive makes it easy to see if you could save when you bundle your home and auto policies. Try it at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
This message comes from Greenlight. Ready to start talking to your kids about financial literacy? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app that teaches kids and teens how to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest with your guardrails in place. With Greenlight, you can send money to kids quickly, set up chores, automate allowance, and keep an eye on your kids' spending with real-time notifications. Join millions of parents and kids building healthy financial habits together on Greenlight. Get started risk-free at greenlight.com/Spotify.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. Now, I was looking for fun ways to tell you that Mint's offer of unlimited premium wireless for $15 a month is back. So I thought it would be fun if we made $15 bills, but it turns out that's very illegal. So there goes my big idea for the commercial. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3-month plan equivalent to $15 per month required. New customer offer for first 3 months only. Speed slow after 35 gigabytes if network's busy. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
Welcome back to Mama Mystery. I am your host, Kelly.
And I am your co-host, Austin. And
we are back for another true crime episode. Before we get into today's episode, I want to point out that we are going to be doing more of those Mama Minute episodes, which I'm really excited about. And we've been getting some really great responses and some messages from you guys. Some of them are asking for advice. Some of them are case recommendations. Either way, I love it all. So please keep sending it. MamaMystery.com. If you just scroll down, there's a form there and you can write us a message. If you don't put your name on there, I will not know who it's from. So don't use that to be mean to me, but you can use that if you want to stay anonymous. So there's that. Okay.
Sounds good.
Okay. So in today's episode, we're going to talk about a case that quite frankly is both mind-blowing and tragic. This is the story of Marie Carlson, a mother who was simply trying to get her life back together, but ended up entangled with the wrong people. She trusted them, believed in them, and in return, they took advantage of her in the most horrific way. And if things had gone slightly differently, this case might have remained unsolved. The man responsible for this could have easily gotten away with it, but thanks to some dedicated investigators, justice was eventually served. Though even today, many questions still linger about how Marie's life came to such a brutal end. So let's jump right into it and get comfortable because there's a lot to go over here. Marie Jane
Jane Carlson was born on October 7th of 1974 in the Philippines to a single mother. For those who knew her, Marie's spirit and resilience were evident from an early age. She was taken in by an American man who raised her in the United States alongside his other children. And from the start, Marie formed an incredibly close bond with one of her adoptive father's daughters, Esta. They were inseparable, the kind of bond that made them feel like sisters because deep down, they just always had this gut feeling that they were connected along the way. And this is where things get interesting because after living together for several years, Marie's adoptive father dropped a bombshell. He was actually her biological father. And that gut feeling that Marie and Esta had about being sisters, turns out it wasn't just emotional, it was real. Their closeness made so much more sense now. And this revelation only deepened their bond. You can imagine how finding out something like this could completely shift your whole world. But for Marie and Esta, it just made them even closer. They were sisters by blood, but they had been sisters in every other sense of the word for years. As they got older, Marie and Esta's relationship grew stronger. They even moved into an apartment together that just happened to be located right behind a karaoke bar. An absolute score for Marie because she loved karaoke. I mean, this woman was all about having fun, singing her heart out, just being full of life. And you can easily picture it, Marie and Esta, two young women living behind this karaoke bar, spending their nights belting out their favorite tunes together. Like, these are just the kinds of memories that they created. They're lifelong memories. Esta later described Marie as someone who was naturally magnetic, the kind of person who drew people in with her energy and her kindness. She was always lifting people up around her, constantly pointing out other people's positive traits, and wearing her signature color, pink. Her sister said Marie used the word beautiful a lot, not just to describe people physically, but their whole aura. It was like she saw beauty in everyone and everything. And that's the thing about Marie. People were drawn to her, and no one could relate to that more than Jeff Carlson. Jeff Carlson was captivated by Marie's spirit, and it didn't take long before they fell in love. Marie and Jeff got married, and together they had a beautiful baby girl named Paris. This was a happy time for Marie. She had a loving husband, a gorgeous daughter, and was even pursuing a college degree in criminal justice. Her dream was to join the FBI one day. Marie was ambitious, smart, and driven, and she had big plans for her future. But her life just wasn't always that simple. There was something that Marie struggled with on and off throughout her life, and that was her mental health. Marie had ups and downs, and those struggles took a toll on her relationships, her career, and her life. Eventually, she was diagnosed with bipolar disorder, and for anyone who has dealt with mental health issues, you know how complicated it can be. Getting a diagnosis is both a relief, but also kind of a burden. On one hand, you finally have an explanation for everything you've been experiencing. But on the other hand, you're faced with the challenge of managing it for the rest of your life. And for Marie, managing her mental health wasn't easy. She tried. She really, really tried. But despite her efforts, her marriage with Jeff eventually ended. But it's worth noting that the two ended their marriage and still remained friends. Jeff was always supportive of Marie, and they parted ways on good terms. There was not any bad blood between them, no heated arguments, no custody battles, no bitterness. They were still a team when it came to parenting their daughter. And honestly, that's just not something you see every day. They truly cared about each other's well-being, but at the end of the day, they knew that they both needed to focus on their own individual paths. So for a while, Marie had full custody of Paris, but eventually she came to the heartbreaking conclusion that Jeff might be able to offer her more stability for their daughter. Marie's mental health struggles made it really difficult for her to settle down in one place and provide the consistent environment that a child ultimately really needs. But make no mistake, this was not an easy decision for Marie, and she didn't just abandon her daughter. She just knew she had to make the selfless decision to give her daughter something better. Now, Marie didn't give up after her marriage ended. She was determined to find stability for herself, to rebuild her life in a way that would allow her to be a better mother and a better person. And that's when she decided to move to Fort Walton Beach, Florida, a beautiful area on the Emerald Coast. If you've ever been down there, you know just how stunning it is. It's really a perfect place for a fresh start. Marie found a job working at a coffee shop located inside Calvary Emerald Coast Church, which was a local church that would play a massive role in the rest of her life. The church was run by Pastor James Flanders, and he was a charismatic leader known for his laid-back, inspiring sermons. James had this way of really drawing people in, much like Marie did. He even posted his sermons on YouTube, which helped the church grow and gain a lot of followers. But it wasn't James, or just James, who had this pull. His wife, Tanya Flanders, was also heavily involved in the church, and she ran the women's ministry. She also was heavily involved in giving back to the community. And the couple had a reputation for being very generous and kind-hearted, people who were always willing to lend a hand to those in need. And that's exactly what they did for Marie. At first, it seemed like a dream come true for Marie. The Flanders helped pay some of her bills, and in October of 2009, they even took it a step further by moving Marie in with them. By all appearances, it was a kind gesture, a way for the Flanders to support someone that they really cared about. But looking back, it's clear that what started as an act of kindness would take a dark and twisted turn. This wasn't the first time Marie had been taken in by someone who wanted to help her. Before moving in with the Flanders, Marie had been supported by another woman, Alice Barber, who went by Kay. Kay had been a motherly figure to Marie when she was younger, taking her in when she was just 18 years old and struggling to find her way. Kay loved Marie and even gave her the nickname Rosie because she was always so happy and upbeat. And keep Kay in mind because she's going to play an important role in this story later on.
Kay.
Nice. Marie's living situation with the Flanders seemed fine at first, but as time went on, things started to get just kind of strange. In 2010, Marie moved to Arizona to live with James's family for a bit. And we don't exactly know why she made this move or what led to it, but we do know that she didn't stay in Arizona for long. Marie eventually returned to Fort Walton Beach and moved back in with James and Tanya. But here's where things take a bizarre twist. Marie became pregnant. But the story behind her pregnancy was just anything but straightforward. To explain her pregnancy to the congregation and people at the church, Marie told them that she'd been dating an abusive man in Arizona who got her pregnant and then abandoned her. And according to this version of the story, Marie wanted to terminate the pregnancy, but James and Tanya, just being the kind-hearted people they were, stepped in and offered to adopt the baby instead. It seemed like a noble gesture, helping out someone in need and giving the baby a loving home, like a win for all, right? But that wasn't the only story going around. According to Tanya's inner circle of close friends, the real story was that Marie was acting as a surrogate for the Flanders. See, James and Tanya had struggled with infertility for years. They had experienced multiple miscarriages and desperately wanted a child of their own. So Marie, out of the goodness of her heart, agreed to help them out by becoming a surrogate mother for them. And how did they go about getting Marie pregnant? Well, at first, Tanya's friends were told that James and Marie had used a turkey baster. You know, that like an at-home method. Mm-hmm. But eventually, the truth came out, and it was a lot more scandalous than that. James and Marie had sex. Not just once, but multiple times. And what's more shocking is that Tanya was apparently okay with it. Apparently, she approved of the whole arrangement, saying that it was necessary for them to have the child that they so desperately wanted. I can't relate. I can't relate to wanting a child so desperately that I'd be willing to let my husband have sex with someone else. Even if it meant like this person was going to be a surrogate mother, you know, and carry this child. There's other ways. Mm-hmm. There's other ways. And I think that would be not just a last resort. It's just, it wouldn't be an option. Mm-hmm. Now, if that wasn't strange enough, there was yet another version of the story that was circulating. According to some people, Marie was supposed to stick around for 3 months after the baby was born to nurse the child, and then she would leave for good. And in this version, Marie was basically just gifting the baby to James and Tanya as a way to thank them for all they had done for her. Like, flowers isn't enough. I gotta give you a baby that I'm baking for 9 months. I don't know. So we just have all these different stories flying around, and no one really knew exactly what the truth was. The only thing they knew for certain was that Marie was pregnant and James was the father.
And there's a mess here.
And there's a triangle.
It's messy.
It's very messy. So Marie gave birth to a baby girl named Grace on October 19th of 2011. And for a while, everything seemed okay. But just 3 months after Grace was born, things took a dramatic turn. On October 19th, a group text was sent out to a small number of people in Marie's life, including her sister, her ex-husband Jeff, and Kay. The text read, "Yesterday I left for Fort Walton Beach. There is something I have been waiting to do for a very long time, and there will be no better time than now to do it. I didn't tell any of you what I've been planning or that I was about to leave because you probably would have tried to talk me out of it. I appreciate and love all of you." Now, if you're close to someone and you get a text like that, how would you feel?
Read the text again.
"Yesterday, I left for Fort Walton Beach, and there's something that I've been waiting to do for a very long time, and there will be no better time than now to do it. I didn't tell any of you what I have been planning or that I was about to leave because you probably would have tried to talk me out of it. I appreciate and love all of you."
Sounds like a suicide note.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can see that. I also think it sounds kind of like someone else maybe wrote it and not her.
That too. But that's probably the mama mystery side of you.
Sure. And I'm not even trying to spoil anything. Mm-hmm. I just, if I got a text like that from somebody, I'd be like, hold on, we need to talk.
Yeah,
like,
this is sketchy.
If this really is what you want to do, then fine, I won't try to stop you, but let me at least hear your voice say it. Right.
Yeah.
Well, Marie's family and friends were immediately suspicious. This message just didn't sound like Marie at all. And more importantly, they couldn't believe that she would just up and leave without saying anything to Paris, her first daughter. It didn't sit right with them, and they weren't wrong to be worried. Several people tried texting and calling Marie, but there was no response. Kay reached out to ask about Grace, and when she did get a reply, it felt off. Instead of referring to James and Tanya as James and Tanya, like she'd always had, Marie, or whoever was texting from her phone, called them Tanya and James. And this might seem like a very small detail, but it was enough to raise red flags for Kay. She knew Marie very well, and this just did not feel right. Kay's gut told her something was terribly wrong. I think that just is such a fascinating detail that somebody had enough wherewithal and like self-awareness to recognize something seemed off, even if it was just the interchange of two names, mm-hmm. to be like, wait, this doesn't seem right. So
someone has some good intuition.
Yes, yes. So feeling uneasy, Kay decided to reach out directly to James and Tanya to ask if everything was okay. But their response didn't offer much reassurance. They claimed that Marie had left 2 days earlier on the 17th. So now, with no word from Marie and her departure sounding more and more suspicious, Marie's ex-husband Jeff reported her missing on October 24th of 2011. The Okaloosa, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, Okaloosa County Sheriff's Office opened a missing persons case immediately after Jeff's report.
Summer's here, and Nordstrom has everything you need for your best dress season ever. From beach days and weddings to weekend getaways and your everyday wardrobe, discover stylish options under $100 from tons of your favorite brands like Mango, Skims, Princess Polly, and Madewell. It's easy, too, with free shipping and free returns, in-store order pickup, and more. Shop today in stores, online at Nordstrom.com, or download the Nordstrom app.
The Disney Plus Hulu Max Bundle. It's the ultimate bundle for an unbelievable price. Plans starting at $16.99 a month. Get it and watch Marvel Television's Ironheart on Disney Plus.
I want to build something iconic.
A new season of The Bear on Hulu.
We can make people happy.
And The Epic, a Minecraft movie on Max.
Anything you can imagine is possible.
The Disney Plus Hulu Max Bundle. Plans starting at $16.99 a month. All these and more now streaming. Terms apply. Visit DisneyPlusHuluMaxBundle.com for details.
4th of July savings are here at the Home Depot, so it's time to get your grilling on. Pick up the Traeger Pro Series 22 Pellet Grill and Smoker, now on special buy for $389, was $549. Smoke a rack of ribs or bake an apple pie, this grill is versatile enough to do it all. This summer, no matter how you like your steaks, your barbecues are guaranteed to be well done. Celebrate 4th of July with fast free delivery on select grills right now at the Home Depot. Subject to availability.
Jeff had been upfront with them. Yes, Marie had disappeared for short periods before, but she never left without contacting Paris. It was completely out of character for her to go just radio silent like this. And what's surprising about this case, though, is how quickly police took action. Oftentimes, when an adult is reported missing, especially with one who has a history with mental health issues, law enforcement might hesitate to get involved. But in this case, they took her disappearance seriously from the start. So something we don't often see, but I'm glad that they did. Now, as the investigation kicked off, detectives quickly honed in on James and Tanya Flanders. Marie had been living with them, after all, and their explanations really weren't adding up. When detectives interviewed James on October 27th, he gave his account of the situation, claiming that Marie had agreed to be a surrogate for him and Tanya. He told them about the decision to forego IVF and just do things the old-fashioned way, which resulted in Marie's pregnancy. James explained that Marie had been living with his family in Arizona when she got pregnant, and he described how he and Tanya had visited her, and during that trip is when he and Marie had sex once, and that one encounter resulted in her pregnancy.
One and done.
According to James, Tanya had approved of it. Red flag. I just cannot. It reminds me of the Scott Peterson case when he's like, yeah, I told Lacey that I was having an affair with this Amber Fry chick and she was fine with it. Bullshit. No, she wasn't. Why would you even say that out loud?
Listen, okay, I agree with what you're saying. There's a lot of open relationship swinger type people out there. I think there's more than me, you, and you people listening. They're like, no, you're crazy. I think there's more than we realize out there. These open relationship type people. I really do. Do you not think that?
I guess you're probably right. I just have a hard time relating to it. I can't understand it. Like, okay, I know this is a stretch. Okay. So if you're like an open relationship person, don't come for me, but it's as hard for me to understand why someone would kill someone as it is for someone to not get upset that their husband is having sex with another woman. Like, it's just hard for me to understand. I can't wrap my head around it. I would kill somebody, probably.
Monogamy, baby.
You better stay monogamous. I'm going to kill you. Anyway, that's not a threat.
That's exactly what it was.
It's a promise. Ooh. Okay. So anyway, after that one time, sure, the pregnancy was confirmed, and James said that they moved Marie back to Florida to keep an eye on her, especially because Tanya was worried that Marie might terminate the pregnancy. But why would she terminate the pregnancy if she was in on it the whole time and knew that this was the plan? Like, why would that
mental
be an issue?
Issues.
Well, he also described how after the baby was born, things began to change. According to James, Marie's mental health started spiraling, and she wasn't taking her medication anymore. He claimed that she seemed to be sinking into a depressive state, and he was genuinely concerned about her well-being. And on October 17th, the last day that James and Tanya claimed they saw Marie, he said he stayed home from work to keep an eye on her. That day, Tanya had left the house with the baby to go shopping in nearby Destin, leaving James and Marie alone. James explained that Marie went to take a nap, and when she woke up, he decided to go out for a run. But when he returned, Marie was gone, along with her white Mazda truck. The next day, on the 19th, they received the infamous group text from Marie's phone saying that she had left to pursue something she'd always wanted to do. And that, according to James, was the last they'd ever heard from her. However, something about this story did not sit right with investigators, and their suspicions deepened after they discovered Marie's truck. On October 18th, James and Tanya claimed they found her truck parked in long-term parking at the Destin-Fort Walton Beach Airport. According to James, they didn't want her to rack up the parking fees, so they drove her truck back to their house, and they even provided detectives with a receipt from the parking lot showing that they picked up the truck on the 21st. But here's where things get interesting. The parking lot's records showed that Marie's truck was parked there on the 18th, which is the day after James claimed she had left. Now, if she had supposedly vanished on the 17th, how could the truck have ended up at the airport then on the 18th? But more importantly, why was James' cell phone pinging off the same tower as the airport on the 18th, just minutes after the truck was supposedly parked there? Detectives knew they were onto something. They pulled the phone records for James, Tanya, and Marie, and what they found was chilling. Marie's phone had been inactive after October 17th, but in the days following her disappearance, James' phone and Marie's phone were pinging off the same cell towers, meaning the phones were together. Now, this directly contradicted James' claims that Marie had left and that he hadn't been in contact with her. The fact that their phones were still together, pinging off the same towers after her disappearance, suggested that James was not being truthful. Even more damning was the phone activity on the 19th when Marie's phone pinged off a tower near the Flanders home. Now, if Marie had left town, as James claimed, then how was her phone still in the area? This was a crucial discovery that poked major holes in James' story. And then there was more. Detectives uncovered a report from a police officer who had come across Marie's truck on the 17th, which was the very day she supposedly disappeared. The truck had been parked at a Chevron gas station, and the officer thought it looked abandoned, so he ran the plates. But at that point, Marie hadn't been reported missing, so the officer didn't take any further action. Now that Marie was missing, this discovery became a critical piece of evidence. Now here's the kicker. James's phone placed him at the gas station an hour after he claimed Marie had left. An hour after he supposedly saw her for the last time, he was near her abandoned truck. So to detectives, this is no coincidence. It seemed more and more likely that James had a hand in whatever happened to Marie, and now it's just a matter of proving it. Based on the evidence that they had gathered, detectives started to develop a theory. They believed that James had killed Marie, possibly on the 17th, and that he abandoned her truck at the gas station to make it look like she had run off. But when no one stole the truck, he moved it to the airport parking lot the next day on the 18th, hoping to throw investigators off the trail and make it seem like maybe Marie had left voluntarily. And that text message, the one that supposedly came from Marie saying that she had left, it was starting to look like James had sent that message himself using Marie's phone after she was already dead. Now, with their theory in place, detectives needed more evidence to connect James directly to the crime. They continued interviewing members of the church, hoping to find someone who could provide additional insights. And that's when things took an even darker, more twisted turn. While interviewing Tanya's close friends, detectives learned that there was more to the relationship between James, Tanya, and Marie than anyone had initially let on. One friend revealed that the three of them weren't just cohabitating or working together on the surrogacy. They were actually involved in a throuple. According to Tanya, Marie wasn't just their surrogate. She was her sister wife.
Now it all makes sense.
This revelation was shocking. Here was a pastor and his wife, known for their public image as devout Christians, leading a secret polyamorous relationship with a woman that they had taken in under the guise of helping her. And what's more, the relationship didn't align with the values that they preached at their church. It was clear why this had all been kept under wraps. But according to Tanya, things changed after Grace was born. She claimed that Marie became withdrawn and her behavior started to shift. Instead of being content with the arrangement, Tanya said that Marie wanted Grace and James all to herself. This was the first suggestion that Marie had possibly changed her mind about leaving Grace with the Flanders after that 3-month nursing period was over. Another member of the church shared something even more chilling. Tanya had allegedly said in a conversation with friends that James could never kill Marie, but she could. This statement raised serious questions about whether Tanya had been involved in whatever happened to Marie. Detectives now had enough circumstantial evidence to suspect foul play, but there was one big problem. They didn't have a body. And without a body, it would be difficult to prove that Marie had been murdered, let alone that James or Tanya were responsible. By this point, investigators had pieced together a timeline of Marie's disappearance and the suspicious behavior of the Flanders. They also knew they needed more concrete evidence to bring charges against James or Tanya, and that is when they received a significant break in the case. In April of 2012, an anonymous tip came through the Crime Stoppers claiming that James had killed Marie and buried her body in the backyard of their home. This tip provided the probable cause detectives needed to conduct a thorough search of their property. Armed with cadaver dogs and ground-penetrating radar, investigators searched the Flanders' backyard for any sign of Marie's remains. But after hours of digging and searching, they came up empty-handed. There was no sign of a body, and the search, which had held so much promise, ended in disappointment. Without a body, the case stalled once again. Detectives were certain that James was responsible, but they still lacked the hard evidence they needed to make an arrest. And so for the next several months, the case remained cold. The case might have stayed cold indefinitely, but James and Tanya's behavior soon raised even more red flags. In January of 2013, detectives learned that the Flanders were planning to flee. A rental truck was spotted.
I was literally just guessing they're going to move.
Really?
Yes, I was about to say it out loud. I was about to say, I bet they're going to move across the country.
Well, a rental truck was spotted outside of their house, and it appeared that they were preparing to move to Arizona. So you're right, across the country to Arizona. And on January 28th of 2013.
Real quick, I got to say this. Yeah. It's kind of irrelevant, but I was just thinking, okay, if you guys, whether you did it or not, which I think they did, mm-hmm. why would you hang out there and be this public-facing preacher? Mm-hmm. And stay in the community. Like, why wouldn't you move?
Right. I think they were hopeful that enough people probably believed in them.
And say, oh, it'll blow over.
Maybe. Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe. But especially if you did it, you'd be wanting the hell out of there. That's why I thought that. But anyways.
Yeah. Well, on January 28th of 2013, detectives received word that the Flanders were leaving town in the middle of the night. After months of stalling the investigation, James and Tanya were making a run for it, and this only fueled detectives' beliefs that the Flanders had something to hide. Around the same time, a man named Jason Anderson, the youth pastor at their church, came forward with some startling information. Jason revealed that James had approached another church member and asked for help leaving the country. According to Jason, James had seemed extremely agitated and possibly even suicidal during this conversation. He was acting like a man under intense pressure, which only added to the suspicion surrounding him. Then there was the most disturbing part of Jason's story. James admitted to being in a polygamous relationship with both Tanya and Marie. And during a meeting with church leaders, James confessed that he had been intimate with Marie, not just as part of the surrogacy arrangement, but as part of their polyamorous throuple. He also admitted that on the day Marie disappeared, the two of them had gotten into a physical altercation, which left him with scratches all over his body. Now, this was the first time anyone had heard about a violent confrontation between James and Marie, and it was also the first time that James had acknowledged that things between him and Marie ended on bad terms, but he insisted that she had been alive the last time he saw her. Now, following this meeting, James resigned as the pastor, and then just a few days later, the Flanders fled town. Now, despite the Flanders' disappearance, detectives were not ready to give up on finding justice for Marie. They continued their investigation, and in 2014, advances in forensic technology provided the breakthrough that they desperately needed. Marie's laptop, which had been wiped clean when investigators first examined it, was reanalyzed using newer forensic techniques. This time, investigators were able to recover hundreds of texts between Marie and James. And these texts, many of which were explicit and sexual in nature, confirmed that their relationship had been far more intimate than James had originally let on. The texts also stopped abruptly on the 17th of October, the day Marie was last seen. This further corroborated detectives' theory that something had happened to her on that day. Additionally, Marie's bank account activity had completely stopped on the 17th, and there had been no activity on her credit cards or her phone since that date. All signs pointed to the fact that Marie had not left voluntarily, that something terrible had happened to her. So armed with this new evidence, detectives felt that they finally had enough to charge James with second-degree murder. They were still missing one key piece of evidence, which was Marie's body, but they believed that the circumstantial evidence was strong enough to at least make an arrest. So on May 5th of 2015, James Flanders was arrested and charged with second-degree murder. It was a moment of relief for Marie's family and loved ones, but there was still one lingering question. Where was Marie? Prosecutors knew they had a strong case, but they also knew that without a body, taking the case to trial would be risky. There was a chance that James could be acquitted due to the lack of physical evidence, and That was just a risk they were not willing to take. The one thing that could solidify their case and bring closure to Marie's family was finding her remains. So they made a difficult decision and offered James a plea deal. If he agreed to plead guilty to manslaughter and lead them to Marie's body, his sentence would then be reduced. In April of 2016, James accepted the plea. He confessed to killing Marie, but claimed it had been an accident. According to James, on October 17th, he said he and Marie had gotten into a heated argument after he suggested she be hospitalized for her depression. During the argument, Marie allegedly attacked him, and in an attempt to restrain her, James said he gave her a bear hug. He
a
claimed,
bear hug.
Mm-hmm.
And it accidentally suffocated her?
Well, he claimed that they fell to the ground during the struggle and that when he got up, Marie was no longer breathing.
Dude had 6 months of thinking about this and standing on his lie of I had nothing to do with it and blah, blah, blah. And you finally arrive at, okay, it did happen. I bear hugged her and she died.
Right.
People are so stupid.
Right. And rather than call 911, James said he just panicked and he wrapped Marie's body in a blanket and buried her in the backyard like you would a fucking pet. That's what kills me, is just like the complete disregard for human life when you're trying to say it was an accident. Like, No, there is a huge disconnect between something happening by accident and then what you choose to do after. Now, according to him, the hole he dug was so deep that when detectives searched the yard during that initial investigation, that's why they hadn't been able to find her remains. So James's confession was obviously hard to believe, and the idea that a bear hug had accidentally killed Marie seemed really far-fetched, but with no other explanation and the need for closure, the plea deal was then accepted. And on April 7th of 2016, investigators, guided by James, returned to the Flanders' old property and began digging
in
the
backyard. Can you imagine if you lived in that house?
No.
And the police show up with the murder and they say, we got to dig up your backyard. There's a dead body back here.
No. And like if you had kids and your kids were playing back there, man, like, that would be so eerie. I would have to move. So they start digging in the backyard. And after several hours, they finally uncovered Marie's body buried deep in the ground where it had been for nearly 5 years. For Marie's family, the discovery brought some sense of closure. They were finally able to bring Marie home and lay her to rest, but the pain of knowing what she had endured and the fact that her killer could serve such a short sentence remained. Now, under the terms of the plea deal, James was sentenced to 15 years in prison for manslaughter. To many, this sentence felt like a huge slap in the face. 15 years for taking somebody's life? It hardly seemed fair, but for Marie's family, having her back was worth the compromise. At least now they could give her the peace that she deserved. James Flanders is currently serving his sentence, but he is eligible for release as early as 2029.
That's crazy.
In 5 years. The thought of him being a free man again is just really kind of crazy to think about. But as for Tanya, no charges were ever brought against her. Despite the suspicion surrounding her involvement, investigators never found enough evidence to prove that she had played a role in Marie's murder, which I think is crazy because she had to know. And I feel like you could at least charge her with some sort of obstruction of justice or something. Like you're keeping the secret. You had to know that something happened.
Your thruple's missing.
Your thruple's now just a couple. How do you explain that?
What do you say? Do you just say, well, he doesn't know what happened to her and we just think she's missing? How does he not get charged with anything?
Yeah. Oh, but there's also a fresh mound of dirt in the backyard. Give me a break. And that's she had wild. Made comments like, oh, I don't think James could ever do anything, but I know I could.
That's wild.
And honestly, in my opinion, it kind of makes more sense that she would be the one to do it because it would make more sense that she'd be jealous of the relationship that Marie had with James. And maybe she wanted James all back to herself, but wanted to keep the baby too and keep their little, you know, nuclear family intact. So they'll get rid of the one little outsider. Mm-hmm. Like it just makes more sense
more
to me
motive.
That Tanya would do it. Yeah. More motive. The more motive makes more sense. But anyway, she's never been charged. So whatever. Tanya, if you're listening, that's weird. But
that's weird.
Grace, the daughter of Marie, or the daughter that Marie gave birth to, is still being raised by Tanya, which is a reality that is just deeply painful for Marie's loved ones, especially her sister, Esta, who has expressed a desire to gain custody of Grace. And honestly, it does feel like that should be the natural, like, resolution, that Grace would go live with Marie's family, or at least, but it's just really sad because what we don't know is what Grace's life is now with her mom, Tanya. And if Grace is, you know, if Grace considers Tanya to be her mom, you can't just rip Grace from her mom, right? Like, this whole thing is just so twisted and tangled and dark, and it's just super sad.
Yeah, you feel terrible for kids involved.
Mm-hmm. But in the end, Marie Carlson is remembered as someone who was bright and loving and who deserved so much more than what she got in the end. And she was trying to rebuild her life, to find stability and be there for her daughter, Paris, and probably too for her daughter, Grace. But her trust in the wrong people ended up costing her everything. And though her body has been found and her story has been told, the fact that her killer will walk free, could walk free anyway, in 5 years just doesn't seem right.
But that's how a lot of these cases end, mm-hmm. with these sentences that never seem to do justice.
Yeah, I feel like more often than not, the sentence or the resolution in the case just does not feel like enough. Mm-hmm. And if we feel like that as just armchair detectives with a podcast, imagine how their families feel.
Mm-hmm.
I would just have so much resentment and angst and like rage every day if I were them. I don't know how you grapple with that. Like, a lot of therapy, I guess.
Right. I don't know.
I don't know either. But that is it for today's episode of Mama Mystery. Like I mentioned in the beginning, if you want to reach out to us and send us a message, you can do it on our website, mamamystery.com.
That's all we got?
That's it.
Have a great week. Mama Mystery out.
Bye.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things that people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Visit progressive.com to see what you can save. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.